Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Henny, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden, your host of the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Hi, and welcome to episode 445 of the Inexplicable Dumb Show. I'm John Malden, and this week I'm joined via Skype by Blackbird Theater's Greg Green and Wes Driver, and we're going to talk about their upcoming production of their original musical, Myth, a new musical. So we're going to get in that conversation just after, you guessed it, these brief messages.
Would you like to be a pal of the Inexplicable Dumb Show? Well, why don't you head on over to www.inexplicabledumbshow.com and look for the Hosting Donations Accepted button. Press that and make a donation and help the Dumb Show cover its web hosting fees. Your donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for your support.
Hi, I am someone you will probably never meet. Yet I ask you to take time
to think about people you don't know but need your help. Children, some of them. And they don't all play,
they don't
in, the gutter,
all play
of course,
in the gutter, of course. Well, maybe if it's called for.
These men, women, and yes, even the children are professional actors. They want and need your time, money, and support.
For just pennies a second, you can enjoy the fruits of their labor. Make sure they know you heard about them on the Inexplicable Dumb Show. They may look at you funny, but that doesn't matter. It's for the children.
It's for the children. It's time once again for some deep fried theater!
Well, IDSers, I'm joined by the Blackbird Theater's Greg Green and Wes Driver, and they're going to talk about their original production they've got coming up of Myth. So welcome, guys. How you doing?
Hey, good, John. Thank you. Greg here, and I got Wes here.
Hey, man. Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Oh, no problem. So I asked this sort of tongue-in-cheek and wink in my eye, because you guys are known for very straightforward, simple stories delivered honestly. tell me about Myth.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is probably, if you can believe it, probably the most complex work that we've endeavored to try to produce. So even the challenges we put before ourselves in the past, I think this exceeds them.
Yeah, it kind of dwarfs several of our earlier projects.
So, Greg, give the little synopsis here.
So as I think Wes said, using Altman's The Player as his model, it's like, what is it? It's like Into the Woods with Greek gods, is what he would say. So, yeah, it's a, this show is a, it's an original musical. It is set in the world of Greek mythology, but it's an original story set in that world. So you'll know the gods, the humans, of course, a lot of the archetypes are represented, like the princess, the hero, the conniving king, the villainous traitor guy, things like that. So, definitely an epic story. It fits that kind of epic model of the poems Iliad and the Odyssey, and it is a rollicking good time. But Wes and I have been working on the writing the book and the lyrics and working on the story itself for many years. And our good friend Michael Slayton, who was at Lipscomb University with us, we were all there in school together in the mid-90s. Michael is now the chair of composition and theory at Blair School of Music, which is a pretty well-known music school at Vanderbilt. And he is composing it or has composed it. And we're real excited to, after many years gestation, we're in labor right now, and we're in about another 10 days, we'll deliver this baby, and it's going to be a big baby. And it'll be, as if folks are interested in seeing it, and you're in Nashville in particular, it's going to be at the Hillsborough High School Theater, that theater space there in the middle of Green Hills, running July 17th through July 26th.
So why Greek mythology? What drew you guys to setting a story in using the Greek gods?
Where it really started, between my freshman and sophomore years in college, this is in 1990, I did a lot of reading for my upcoming World Lit class, and that's what I did in the summers. And I'm reading the Iliad, the Odyssey, the Aeneid, Dante's Inferno. I mean, it's such great material, rich material, very stirring. You know, some of the few enduring works that are 4,000 years old or so. The one thing that really struck me though about the Iliad and the Aeneid, is that they're great stories, and there's some real echo of the truth, regarding the human experience. But when it comes specifically to the theology of it, I guess, what the Greeks are deifying is, their view of deity, of divinity, the gods, is pretty profoundly different from the way whether you believe in God or not. What we think of God today in the modern Western world is a pretty different kind of deity. And with the Greeks, it really, they're gods because they're powerful and they're glorious and they're beautiful, or they're incredibly desirable, or whatever. The view of God today that people embrace or argue against is more a view of a God whose greatness is in its fullness in love and beneficence, you know, the omnibenevolence of God. And seeing the difference, the disparity between those two views, the ancient Greek view and more of a modern Western view, I thought it was very stirring. So the idea came to me one day in my sophomore year the story idea of a young woman who was mistreated terribly by the gods, who were supposed to be the arbiters and the upholders of justice. And she just has this idea that this can't be justice. She has an idea of justice. She knows what it is, but the gods aren't upholding it, and it shakes her beliefs. She gathers up a group of humans, and they lead a revolt against Olympus. Now that basic idea, that's by the time we get this staged in a few days, it'll be 25 years old, and the story has been shaped and reconceived and worked and layered 100-fold since that first idea. But that kernel is still there at the heart of the story, and there's a lot of richness around that. But we use this story like in a way, I guess, like Sondheim used the fairy tales, the English European fairy tales, to tell a story, to make to try to set some themes at work within that collection of characters and stories, and the Greek myths just still have such a strong echo for people today. It's rich material. Again, it's not like a collection of a bunch of different known myths, mm-hmm. but you have the god and the humans and scenarios that I think you'll definitely echo or mirror some of the classic myths.
So what's been the challenge from the creation point, now that you're putting rubber to road, so to speak, and you're getting up on its feet?
Right.
What has been
the biggest? There have been many challenges. It's funny. Through the process of directing the show, I'm kind of cursing my writer self, you know. It's just like, what are you thinking? How can I stage this? But it's been a great process just to see. I mean, that was one of the reasons we wanted to just go ahead and set about doing it, is to say, what are the challenges in making it a realizable show? And so I would say, you know, probably the biggest challenge is, you know, when you're working in the realm of your own imagination, the physics doesn't play much of a part in it. And in the real world, that's where you have to create your show. And so
sort of these grand ideas of what we would like to do. If, you know, if you had no limitations, even budgetarily, if you had no limitations, we have to start thinking, okay, so working and operating within these frames, how can we still tell the story we need to tell? And that's been a great process that we have worked through together, but also with our designers. Here we are traversing the underworld and Earth and Olympus, and we don't have a fly system or a way to bring in all these different set pieces. So how can we have a sort of a static set and be able to achieve that through staging, through lighting, through, you know, and so just really relying on different techniques to be able to paint the picture that we want to paint and that we need to be able to do. And I think we now are in a position where we feel like we have been able to achieve that. It's just very different from what we would have set out to do when it was just us and the written word, you know.
But then, you know, like with any production of any kind of system or work, I mean, the limitations produce
right.
some interesting innovation. And I think audience members will see that. They won't see a show that's perfectly polished or that is would have the opulence of a Broadway show. But I hope what they get is what they come away with is a I hope it comes across as an impressive and visceral performance, and that people will be like, how do they put that on? You know, when it's obvious that we're working with, you know, it's the biggest project we've ever taken on, but it's a limited budget.
And, sure. Yeah, and I can honestly say too that I don't know that it has been any more complex than some previously staged productions such as Pacific Overtures or Amadeus, which I was also scratching my head going, how did they pull this off? So, I, you know, with almost any work, especially that's, and Amadeus was actually, that experience was very informative for this, just in terms of being able to tell that kind of epic story and to go from place to place and let the scene shift into each other, that having worked through that gave me a lot of insight into how to approach this script as well.
So not only do you have a massive story and a massive scope, an epic tale, that's enough to challenge, you know, yourself in and of itself, but you've gone one extra step and added musical. Made it a musical. Why did they choose to make it a musical?
Right. We were asking ourselves that day.
And if you've been in theater and you've done just regular plays, but you haven't done musicals, you really, I mean, I know I would not have appreciated the first year of our first three shows of our of Blackbird's existence. I really did not appreciate just how much more complicated it is to do a musical. How many more elements, the demands of it, just how many more people, and then everything that comes in, and it so changes the dynamic and what you have to provide as a leader for the production. So yeah, it's complex, and I mean, I just think I think our cast and our crew has been so patient with us as we work through all these different elements. It's like you really ought to, you know, add maybe 30% more rehearsal time, except you can't. We just don't have the resources to do that.
Right.
But yeah, I would, you know. When we, Greg first came to me with this story idea years ago, that first it was just a story, and we had interests in a number of different things. Greg is a big comic book collector, and so I think originally thought of it as like a graphic novel. Wouldn't this be cool to make into a graphic novel? And I was a bit of a film aficionado. I was like, but it could also, you know, be a movie. But in terms of what we felt like we were, you know, was really our wheelhouse to be able to ultimately produce, it was, you know, theater made sense. But I just don't know that this story would work as just a straight theater production. You know, it really, because of the heightened reality, because of the long form storytelling. It really always, just be able to get into the minds and the souls of these characters, we really felt like a musical was the best way to do it, but not just a musical it was really to go back to Sondheim. What Sondheim was able to do, what he is able to do with the form, sort of set an example for us to say, you know, we really want to be able to pull out themes in this way, to be more overt with them, which I think you can get away with in a musical. You write a nice, tight lyric, and you can get away with more sort of a strongly philosophical approach than you can without it. It clunks a little bit harder if you don't have that sort of a music there, but also because of the what we always saw as kind of a cinematic scope to the piece, we wanted what music was able to do to set mood, to set a place. And that's what Michael's been able to do so well with the music to just take you to a different world.
And also, I mean, think about the models we have that are out there, and sometimes work is a great example, but Les Miserables, look at what they could do with the show. There's a lot of musicals I'm not crazy about. I just, you know, they don't have the kind of a story or the emotional dynamic that really there's not enough at stake. Can I name a specific play? Is that all right? A musical, Pajama Game. There's just not a lot at stake in the show. It's light fare, and people can come and enjoy the fun music
about
and
the
whatever.
Kids.
Yeah, I guess. I don't remember that part of the show. I saw it like 3 years ago, and I don't remember. It's just whatever. But then I think about, Les Mis, and there's something at stake from the first moment to the end for not just the lead character, but all the characters have something at stake. Even the bad guy's got something big at stake. And if you can do that with a story, I mean, to me, what I want out of this story, there's a few things I'd want out of this experience for our guests, but the sense of transport. To me, transport is the glory of fiction, and I would love for people to feel like they were in a different place. Just to be able to carry someone away with a story, that is glorious and rare, to quote Callisto, one of our characters.
So tell me again the dates and how we can get tickets and whatnot.
Yeah, it opens July 17 at the theater space in the Hillsborough High School in Green Hills. I think it's 3812 Hillsborough Pike in Nashville. You can go to blackbirdtheater.com. That's theater with an E-R ending, blackbirdtheater.com. And on the front page there's a little link at the top that says On Stage. Click that. You'll go to our myth page. You can see a few publicity stills, read a little bit about the story, see the cast list. There's a big orange button that says Buy Tickets. And you can go and get tickets there. And tickets, $20 general admission, $15 for seniors and students, for a full big show, a new work, and it's a good value, I think.
Outstanding.
And while you're in Greenville, plenty of good shopping too.
Excellent restaurants right across the street. So good, so cool. And of course, I will have links to that information on the show notes page for this particular episode at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com. Well, thanks,
thank you,
fellas.
Yeah, John, always good talking to you, man. Thank you so much for the spotlight.
When guests can't appear in the studio, they are interviewed over Skype. Skype is a great piece of software that turns your computer into a phone. Talk computer to computer or to any phone or cell phone in the world through the Skype Out program. Interested? Download Skype via inexplicabledumbshow.com. Just look for the Download Skype button. Go ahead. Join in the fun.
All right, so that's it. I'd like to thank Wes Driver and Greg Green of Blackbird Theater for stopping by today to chat about their original work that's upcoming called Myth. Again, ticket information that we discussed in the body of this podcast will be found on the show notes page for this particular episode at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com. Hey, do you want to be part of the Dumb Show? Please do so by calling the voicemail line at 615-866-1282 or put your thoughts in an email, podcast@inexplicabledumbshow.com, or follow the show on Twitter at InexplicableDS, at capital I, Inexplicable, capital D, capital S. Find out the latest comings and goings for the show via our Twitter feed. So next week, we're going to be chatting with actor Becca McCoy, and we're going to discuss her cabaret / one-woman show entitled The Pearl and the Hogwaller. So until next week, this is John Malden saying, hey, I'll see ya. Bye.
Are you a music lover? Then let Magnatune dazzle you with how different we are from the rest of the music industry. Interesting independent artists in diverse genres. Perfect quality wave files in addition to MP3s and many other formats. Instant album downloads or traditional CDs by mail with free shipping. All this and half of every sale goes directly to the artist. So visit us now at Magnatune.com. That's MAGNATUNE. Magnatune. We are not evil.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No East. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Pop Alternative Media.